I wanted to read this to you because I think it applies to anybody who lives in a community like Holden Village, or if you're on a, you know, quote, church college campus. This is what he says. The Christian who is adult in love does not will to become or do or feel anything, but only to obey love. And then he goes on. There is an offensive cheerfulness encouraged by some Christians, which is very trying to any person of moderate sensibility. I wonder if you really got that. I mean, I don't understand what offensive cheerfulness is. Don't you get really tired of people that are always cheerful?
Yeah, you wonder.
I mean, you know, there are times when you really would just not see somebody smiling at you, and you have to respond with a smile back. I mean,
What are you reading out of?
This is from his book on He Came Down from Heaven. It's one of his two books of theology. Charles Williams wrote He Came Down from Heaven and The Forgiveness of Sins. And then he wrote The Descent of the Dove, which we have in the village, in the paperback. We don't have the other one. This one about the forgiveness of sins. You'll find in a number, something like this will be in a number of other places. Yes?
Is there any place you could get All Hallowed Be?
I think I don't know why Erdmann's hasn't reprinted that. They said they were going to when we wrote last year. And seems to me it was an Erdmann's publication when we got it the first time, but maybe it wasn't. Do you remember, Carol, which one it was? And of course, I didn't take any of my Charles Williams novels with me because I thought, well, we've got them all up at the village. I should haul all those since I already take, you know, 100 books along, and Carol brings about 2. Which indicates how much we have in our heads and how much we have in the books. I have all mine in books and he has most of his in his head. Much better to have it in your head. It's much lighter to carry. Well, if I find out about that All Hallows Eve, I certainly will check it out. But I think, Teresa, you should write to Erdmann's about it because it's the one book that they haven't come out with yet. All right, now I'm going to start over again and see if you can pay attention. There is an offensive cheerfulness encouraged by some Christians, which is very trying to any person of moderate sensibility. We are to be bright. We are to smile at strangers. We are the last horror of daily life to get into conversation with strangers. It is some comfort to reflect that Messias was against our being bright as he was against our being gloomy. He was against our being anything at all. He indicated continually that it was our wish to do or be something by ourselves, even to be saved by ourselves. That was the root of the trouble. Now I'm going to just go back to that because he has an inverse order here that's hard to catch, so that when what you're going to feel at the end is, he thinks we should be saved by ourselves. Because when things come at the end of the sentence, you know, we've always learned that's where the emphasis is. Now, Charles Williams, don't plan to go by any particular rules that you know, because he has his own stylistic patterns. He was against our being anything at all. He indicated continually that it was our wish to do or be something by ourselves, even to be saved by ourselves, that was the root of the trouble. See what I mean? That because we feel we can smile and I'm nice and I'm good and sweet and such a jolly person, everybody likes me, that, well, you know, that's what heaven is going to be filled with, lots of jolly, sweet people that everybody likes. What a boring place. It is at least possible for some of us easily to deny ourselves any tendency towards a communal cheerfulness. And I think you really do have to kind of watch this in a community like this, because I don't think, especially in the winter, that we should make a practice of being gloomy or or not gloomy and sort of walk around like neutral, you know, beings with just...
Like the wind and cigarettes.
You, is that the way they look?
Yeah, haven't you seen them on billboards? The big Winston cigarette?
No. What do they look like?
Oh, cool and patched.
Oh, that one. I was thinking of Salem, I guess. Yeah. Cool. I see what you mean.
You know why that is? Uh-oh.
Well, that's interesting, not to look happy in a cigarette ad. Oh, that's cute. Is it? Well, I suppose Charles Lewis would say that's the proper way to deal with the situation. But I'm not advocating being glum and not interested in people who come your way. But this feeling, and I do it so much, and I think to myself, why did I talk to that person? Why? How could they possibly care if I made some inane remark or not? And I think that we do have to remember that you don't just have to scatter these little bits all the time and all the time and punctuate them with smiles. If you feel like that, if you are a naturally smiling person, there's no reason why you should pretend to be an unsmiling person. But don't let somebody else's personality of you know, grinniness become your pattern or your criterion for that's the ideal personality. And that really is a problem. So just remember that there is such a thing as being too much of a muchness about this when you look at other people and make them your kind of your model.
Mary,
the reason I took this was because I didn't have to take all the copies of the forgiveness of sins and the descent of the dove with me. Because this is a book called The Theology of Romantic Love, which is a study in the writings of Charles Williams, and I hate to even mention it because I'm afraid it's out of print. And but it's an excellent book, and I hope that it will be reprinted because it's very, very good. The woman's name is Scheidler, and she's from the University of Iowa. Now at Ames. Her husband is a professor of philosophy down there, and I don't know what her particular field is, but she does have an excellent analysis of the theology of romantic love, which is what Charles Williams is talking about in terms, particularly in the relationship with the Dante pattern. The first thing I wanted to find out about this morning was, the reason I wanted you to go back and get your copies of The Inferno, I want to hear what part or section you were going to, you were thinking of using as a testimonial to the fact that you either liked or did not like Dante. You certainly have a right to say that you don't like him, or that you think that you wouldn't recommend it to anybody, because that's not a sales, a sales pitch entirely. It is to some extent. So I think maybe it would be, perhaps it would be a good idea to just suggest, to ask those of you who have found the parts right now to read them, and then those of you who are still looking madly through your text will have a few more minutes to peruse it. All right, how many of you, who's willing to check? Carla?
Okay,
all right. Now, will you give us the the section where it is in which canto and what line?
It's canto 3, line
Canto 3. Well, now look. Now listen. You can look at the cantos. If you don't know where the cantos are, they're at the top of the page. Every single double page has a canto. It says canto 1, 2, 3, 21. Now just look up there. And then she's giving you the lines. Now this is the way you have to look at poetry this way when it's written in length. You're not always going to have the same text and be able to refer to the same pages. Fortunately, I mean, we've been doing that because it's quicker. But I think you you have to, you know, watch this a little bit, that you don't get too sloppy. Just because this is done conversationally is not that you're not supposed to pay attention and know what's going on. I will say that I was really, I was quite jarred by the fact that you didn't know anything about this, the guardian of the threshold and the whole understanding of the will, which we went into in great detail at the beginning of the Dante study. And I think some of it is because of the informal way in which we learn and deal with the subject, you don't accept the challenge, perhaps, of really concentrating, because we're not used to concentrating on each other's conversation that much. We're too busy usually thinking about what we're going to say. All right, Carla.
The lines are 25 to 51. All right. I have a couple of words that I'm not sure how to pronounce. Mm-hmm. One of them is Guerdon.
Mm-hmm. Guerdon.
Guerdon.
Or Guerdon. Guerdon is the best way to pronounce that. I didn't listen to it.
Caitiff. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tongues mixed and mingled, horrible execration, shrill shrieks, hoarse groans, fierce yells, and hideous blether, and clapping of hands thereto without cessation, made tumult through the timeless night that hither and thither drives in dizzying circles sped, as whirlwind whips the spinning sands together. Whereat, with horror flapping around my head, Master, what's this I hear? Who can they be, these people so distraught with grief? I said. And he replied, the dismal company of wretched spirits, thus find their guerdon due, whose lives knew neither praise nor infamy. They're mingled with that cage of angel crew, who against God rebelled not, nor to him were faithful, but to self alone were true. Heaven cast them forth, their presence there would dim the light. Deep hell rejects so base a herd, lest sin should boast itself because of them. Then I, but Master, by what torment spurred are they driven on to vent such bitter breath? He answered, I will tell thee in a word. This dreary huddle has no hope of death, yet its blind life trails on so low and craft that every other fate it envieth. No reputation in the world it has, mercy and doom hold it alike in scorn. Let us not speak of these, but look.
That's a really good, section. And when you read it, you can put as much emphasis as you want into it. I mean, you know, you can ham it up if you like, because sometimes, I mean, if you feel like it, you don't have to. If that's not your nature, you don't have to do it. But if you want to, you certainly may, because it's perfectly permissible. All right, somebody else. Anybody else ready?
Well, I just found it. I've never read it before.
Okay, well, I think there's some other people that are ready. Ted, are you ready?
No.
Matt? When were you planning to do this? Tonight? I mean, were you people planning to find these tonight?
Today
sometime. Well, okay, well, this is a good time to do it, you know, because you almost have to have a space and time and place to think about something at Holden, otherwise you get interrupted. Somebody else?
I know.
Okay, Joe?
This is in Canto 8. Uh-huh. Line 79
through
87.
All right.
Then I'm
gonna... You can preface it with anything you want to. If you want to explain anything about it, you may. If you don't want to, you don't have to.
A long way round we had to navigate, before we came to where the ferryman roared, out with you now, for there's the gate, for here's the gate. Thousand and more thronging the barricade, I saw the spirits fallen from heaven, who cried angrily, who goes there? Why walks this man? I'm dead, the kingdom of the dead.
Now, Joe, when you do that, remember to put these sentences together. You know, why walks this man undead? The kingdom of the dead? You mean, you see, undead comes with the man. Just because it's in another, that's for all of you when you read it.
Should I try that line
again? Do that again, yeah.
Angrily, who goes there? Why walks this man undead, the kingdom of the dead? My guy, weary and wise, made signs to them to show. He thought a secret girly.
Parley, that's a conversation.
Then their pride. Is it okay?
Abating somewhat. Then their pride abating somewhat. You see what I mean?
Yeah. Then their pride abating somewhat, they called out. That was where I was going to stop.
Oh. Oh, I see. You were just going to read this one, starting 879, 87. Okay.
And then flip the page to the images and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's where it says Virgil was repulsed at the gate. Humanism is always apt to underestimate and to be baffled by the deliberate will to evil.
Oh, neither is it any sure protection against heresy. That's right. No, that's. I think that's a very good thing to read and important to read. But you probably would just have to say that Virgil was stopped at this particular gate in hell, and then explain that. Then read this that he's an example of humanism. Just that much, that's all you need to say, but just so that they get the connection. All right, anybody else? Better take a little time to find these things, I guess. I'll turn this off for the time being. All right, okay. All right. Canto 4, 22 to 42?
Yeah.
All right.
Come, we have far to go. Let us advance. So entering, he made me enter, where the pit's first circle makes circumference. We heard no loud complaint, no crying there, no sound of grief except the sound of sighing, quivering forever through the eternal air. Grief, not for torment, but for loss undying, by women, men, and children, sighed for so. Sorrows thick thronged, their sorrows multiplied. Then my good guide, thou dost not ask me who these spirits are, said he. Whom thou perceivest, ere going further, I would have thee know. They sid not, yet they their merit lacked its chiefest fulfillment, lacking baptism, which is the gateway to the faith which thou believest. For living before Christendom, their knees paid not aright those tributes that belong to God, and I myself am one of these. For such defects alone, no other wrong, we are lost, yet only by this grief offended, that without hope, we ever live and long.
That's really good. That's a good one to use because it's a description of the first circle. You know, which a lot of people, as I say, a lot of people don't recognize that Solzhenitsyn's novel on the first circle is based on the first circle in Dante. And that's a good one to read. One thing in 31 there, when you ask the question, then my good guide, thou dost not ask me who these spirits are, said he, whom thou perceivest. I mean, the idea is that there's a slight question there, because he says, you know, it's the implied thing is, Why aren't you asking me about these people? So you have to just imply that a little bit in your voice, but otherwise, otherwise it's fine. And Joe, I was thinking too that yours, I think you could add that one part over in on the next page there, lines 112 to 117, where they actually slam the gate in Virgil's face. You see, it gives a little bit more of a sense of the action of that, because the other one doesn't. The other one is just a questioning about Dante. Why is he in this kingdom? He's not dead yet. Why is he in this kingdom of the dead? And that is sort of the introduction to the problem. And then when Virgil thinks that he's going to get by with it, then all of a sudden they slam the gate. They weren't going to talk to you either. You look at that and see if you think that would.
You think I should read this part first?
Yeah. Yes, I think it might be all right to read that that little bit on the imagery on the image first, and then read the section.
That will be a little introduction. Won't
yes, I'll introduce. I'll tell them what Dante's about, because otherwise they wouldn't know what all these my guide.
I guess I've got one that I kind of like, sort of on self-pity.
All right.
It's in Canto 7.
Canto 7, 115 to 126?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's hear it.
Nancy.
Who? Oh, it's Nancy. I was looking down here. I didn't even look up to see you. You sound a little bit like Sarah. Okay. Right? That must be it. You begin to take on. All right.
Son, the kind master said, here mayest thou view the souls of those who yielded them to wrath. Further, I'd have thee know and hold for true that others lie plunged deep in the vile broth. This vile broth. Whose sighs, see there, wherever one may look, come bubbling up to the top and make it froth. Bogged there, they say, sullen we were, we took no joy in the pleasant air, no joy of the good sun. Our hearts smoldered in the sulky smoke. Sullen we lie here now in the black mud. This hymn they gurgle in their throats. For whole words they can no wise frame.
That's a very, very good one. I think that's one you ought to all of you mark. In fact, these are all you. I think it would really be fun for you to put in the margin the name of the person that is. You know, has selected it. I think it'd be a fun thing for you to think about. Now you can think about these people when you think about them again in the future, and you look at your Dante, if you ever do, you can identify them with the selection. But this is really the selections that have been chosen have been excellent ones for for their imagery and for their painting of the situation that is really good. I just think that's a marvelous one. One of my favorites. We took no joy of the pleasant air. Our hearts smoldered with a sulky smoke. Wow. Can't think of anything worse with my asthma than sulky smoke. Reading it. Karen, oh, I know why. I was pushing both stop and start. That's how completely, you can see how stupid I am. I really do things backwards. All right, Don, what canto?
Canto 3.
Canto 3.
Line 82 through 118.
Line 82 through 118. All right.
To the riverside, when from that far bank low, a boat shot forth, whose white-haired boatman old bawled as he came, "Woe to the wicked, woe! Never you hope to look on heaven. Behold, I come to ferry you hence across the tide, to endless night, fierce fires, and shramming cold. And thou, the living man there, stand aside. For these who are dead, I budge not, but abode. So when he saw me hold my ground, he cried, "Away with thee, for by another road and other ferries thou shalt make the shore, not here. A lighter skiff must bear thy load." Then said my guide, "Charon, why wilt thou roar and chafe in vain?"
Chafe
in vain. Thus it is willed where power and will are one. Enough. Ask thou no more. I like to use fleecy jawbones.
Yes, I think so too. That was a good bit. That I can give you. Do you want me to give you that?
Have you got
it written down?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
This shut the fleecy jawbones up of that sour, infernal ferryman of the livid wash. Only his flame-ringed eyeballs roll the glower.
Glower.
But those outwearied naked souls, how gash and pale they grew, chattering their teeth for dread when first they felt his harsh tongue's cruel lash. God, they blaspheme their parents' dead. The human race, the place, the time, the blood, the seed that got them, and the womb that bred. Then, huddling, hugger-mugger, down they scud, dismally wailing to the accursed strand, which waits for every man that fears not God. Charon, his eyes red like a burning brand, thumps with his oar the lingerers that delay, and rounds them up and beckons them with his hand. As by one and one, leaves drift away in autumn, till the bough from which they fall sees the earth strewn with its brave array. So from the bank there, one by one, drop all Adam's ill seed, were signaled off the mark as drops the falcon to the falconer's call. Away they're borne across the waters dark, and ere they land that side the stream anon, fresh troops from this side come flocking to embark.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. When you say, remember that, and ere they land that side the stream, anon fresh troops this side came flocking to embark. Anon goes with the next line. See what I mean? That was really good. Fun reading, too. Almost all of it has enough parts to it so that, you know, the kinds of things in it, so that you can use some descriptive reading if you feel like it. Don't have to. I would suggest that those of you who have already selected them, I know you haven't had an opportunity to read this completely, so you could spend the time reading some of the either reading some of the notes or reading some other part of the Inferno that you haven't read as well as you've probably read the first few cantos, which is, I know that there hasn't been a lot of free time in between to pick up on all the assignments. But don't waste this particular hour just because you're through with and have found something. Take the time to read some more in the Dante. You almost need a session like this to get it read.
Do you think it would be good to like read that little bit, about four?
Yes, and then read from the vestibule, and you might read from, I was just underlining the notes again on the vestibule. You could maybe read from that note on the vestibule. That's on page 89. Just that little part there where it says that it doesn't really occur in any previous Christian eschatology, heaven and hell being states in which choice is fixed. There must also be a state in which the refusal of choice is itself fixed, since to refuse choice is in fact to choose indecision. And then the vestibule is the abode of the weathercock mind. You could read that as a part of it. Now which part did you want to read there in Canto 2?
Yeah, starting with line 31.
Canto 2, line 31 to 42. Okay. All right. Do you want to read that?
But how should I go there? Who says so? Why? I'm not
Aeneas,
and I am not Paul. Who thinks me fit? Not others, and not I. Say I submit and go. Suppose I fall into some folly. Though I speak but ill, thy better wisdom will construe it all.
Okay, you want to read that?
But how should I go there? Who says so? Why? I'm not
Aeneas,
and I am not Paul. Who thinks me fit? Not others, and not I. Say I submit and go. Suppose I fall into some folly. Though I speak but ill, thy better wisdom will construe it all. As one who wills and then unwills his will, changing his mind with every changing whim, till all his best intentions come to nil, so I stood havering in that moorland dim, while through fond
wrists
of fancy
whisked
away the first quick zest that
filled
me to the brim.
All right.
I didn't pick anything
up
from this.
Well, then if you look in Canto 2, Carla did the section on a description of what they looked like and how they were, and actually you would be all right to you could read also following what where Carla finished was down on 51, right below that is where it describes the ensign.
Oh, it's got that yucky, gory
part. All right, you want to read that? Okay.
So I beheld, and lo, an ensign borne, whirling that span in red.
So an ensign born whirling.
Oh, okay. An ensign born whirling that span in red, as in disdain of any rest. And there the folk forlorn rushed after it in such an endless train, it never would have entered in my head there were so many men whom death had slain. And when I noted here and there a shade whose face I knew, I saw and recognized the coward spirit of the man who made the great refusal, and that proved sufficed. Here was that rabble, here without a doubt, whom God and whom his enemies defied. This scum who never lived, now fled about, naked and goaded, for a swarm of fierce hornets and wasps stung all the wretched about, until their cheeks ran blood with smothered gears, mingled with brine around their footsteps fell, where loathly worms licked up their blood and tears.
Okay. Now, it's a good thing you can laugh now so that you can take it seriously tonight. Well, actually, you know, it's all right. I'm sure people will laugh because people don't really think that anything this bad is ever going to happen to anybody. You know. What we all fail to realize is that the physical illustration is so much less intense and so much much lighter than the actual experience. Well, that any of us has of suffering, which is not physical. I mean, the suffering that is in the mind and the spirit is—it really cripples your body. So you can see it's not just when he's describing this physically, he really is trying to get at the internal kind of suffering that people are going to be in when they realize that they are separated from God. That's fine. All right, that's... Now, do you want to read that one little part, too, from the vestibule there that...
Maybe I should read that before I read.
I think so. I think you could read that. And then... Carla could read hers. And then you can read yours. Then Dawn can read hers because I'll let you know what order they're going to be in. I'll put you all together, you know, in some kind of order so you get a little bit connected canto wise with each other. That's canto
13.
Okay.
I was thinking of something like line 28 to 40.
Mm-hmm.
And then over on the other side, the line I really like is, in prison spirit, do thou be pleased to tell how souls get cramped into his knotty form.
Yes, that's really good.
But I don't know on either side how.
Well, let's see now, does that begin?
The line on how souls get cramped is 88.
Mm-hmm. Why don't, but now, that's 88, right? Well, what you could do is explain or just mention what this first section is about, the fact that this, you know, how these are trees, that's what's happened to them, and then at 82 then you can just start in there and just say that this is that the question that is asked, that Dante asks, is, you know, how did this happen, and what, you know, what, how is it, how does it all, how does it all come about? And I think you could read 82 to,
I like that line, 105, for the spoiled and the spoiler cannot be his by right.
You see, this isn't just, as your notes explain, this is not just the suicide, but it's the all the violent. It contains the souls of those who wantonly destroyed their own lives or their own goods. And then Sayers has the reference back in Canto 11, turning to weeping what was meant for joy. I mean, in other words, the complete reversal of everything that all the things that were gifts of God have now been, you know, become a means of suffering and misery. Why don't you read from 82, Karen, and then read down through. Why don't you read down through 107, 108 there?
You don't think I should read the part in the top of, like, 28 to 37?
Oh, yes, I had that marked here, too.
Explanation.
Yes, I think you should.
Because, he said, if from these boughs abounding, thou wilt pick up one small and single spray, thy thoughts will stagger at their own dumbfounding. So I put forth my hand a little way, and broke a branch from the foreign tree tall. And the trunk cried out, why tear my limbs away? And it grew dark with blood, and therewithal cried out again, why dost thou rend my bones? Is there no pity in thy breast at all? We that are turned to trees were human once. Nay, thou shouldst tender a more pious hand, but we have been the souls of scorpions. And in 82. And I asked thou, whate'er thou think'st will do, my hunger good and satisfy me well. I cannot ask. Pity and hurts me so.
I cannot ask. See?
Okay. I cannot ask. Pity and hurts me so. Wherefore, so may this man prove liberal. Thus he resumed. Thine errand do perform. In prison spirit, do thou be pleased to tell how souls get cramped into this natty form. And if thou canst, if any shall do off these limbs one day and find release therefrom. At this the trunk blew hard, and the windy puff after this wise soon whistled into speech. You shall be answered with brief words enough. And the wild soul leaps from the body, which its own mad violence forces it to quit. Minos dispatches it down to the seventh ditch. It falls in the wood. No place is picked for it, but as chance carries it, there it falls to be. And where it falls, it sprouts like a corn of wheat, and grows into a sapling, and thence to a wild tree. Then harpies feed on its leaves, and the sharp bite gives agony and vent to agony. We shall take our flight when all souls take their flight, to seek our spoil, but not to be rearrayed, for the spoils of the spoiler cannot be his by right. Here shall we drag them to this gloomy glade. Here shall they hang, each body evermore, borne on the thorn of its own self-slaughtering shame.
Okay. The problem being with the suicide was that this idea of the spoiler and the spoils is refers to what people do with what they own, but see, when when they talk about a spoiler here, the body can't be, you know, can't really belong to the person anymore. It can't be his by right. So you can't, they can't take their, seek their spoils again. So there they are going to be forevermore born on the thorn of its own self-slaughtering shade. All right. Let's see now, how many more people do we have?
Life were bound upon, I woke to find myself in a dark wood, for the right road was wholly lost and gone. Ay me, how hard to speak of it, that rude and rough and stubborn forest. The mere breath of memory stirs the old fear in the blood. It's so bitter it goes nigh to death, yet there again such good, that to convey the tale, I'll write what else I found it with. How I got into it I cannot say, because I was so heavy and full of sleep when I first stumbled from the narrow way. But when at last I stood beneath a steep hillside, which closed that valley's wandering maze, whose dread had pierced me to the heart root deep, then I looked up and saw the morning rays mantle its shoulder from that planet bright, which guides men's feet aright on all their ways. And this a little quieted the affright that lurking in my bosom's wake had lain through the long horror of a hideous night. And as a swimmer panting from the main, he's safe to shore, then turns to face the drive of perilous seas, and looks again. So, while my soul yet fled, did I contrive to turn and gaze on that dread past, once more, whence no man yet came ever after life.
That's a really good section, and good. That's a good place to stop there, because it's got so many good images in it.
I would like to read something out of Canto 6, but I'm not quite sure yet. I don't have to read right now. I'm going to read tonight, do I?
Well, the only thing I want to be sure is that you read it so that, and you get the words out, you know, so that we know about how long it would take. That's what I'm concerned about, so that, you know, listening to it, you can kind of tell how much time it'll take to read, how long a section you want to read. Do you have any idea which one you want to read, which part of it?
Bits and pieces of the whole canto.
Oh, well, that's all right. That's all right. You can do that.
If,
like, canto 6, right? All right, if you take about, I'd say, you know, so just so it doesn't amount to more than about 50 lines or 60 lines altogether, you know, you can just jump around. You wouldn't have to read that much, but I mean, the only problem I have is I want to be sure that we are able to cover the area of the, you know, of the group, so everybody can say a little bit or something about what they want to do. But that's fine. That's fine. If you take, that's canto 6. And also, I didn't want to have duplications, you know. And I don't think anybody else has Canto 6, has taken anything from Canto 6, so that'll be all right. Okay.
Mary, can I do Virgil? Tell him about Virgil.
Very good. Where is that?
It starts on page 67 with it, and they're just talking about it in the notes.
Which canto is that?
Page 67. Oh, it's just on page 67.
Oh, it's the notes. All right. Okay.
And then read on page 73, starting at 61 and going down to 70.
That's canto.
Canto 1,
yeah. And you want to read Canto 1 from where to where?
61 down to
70. All right. That's good. Good idea. All right. You want to read that part from the canto first. I mean, I think you should read the Virgil part first, actually, but I just want to hear the whether that's enough. At 61 down to. All right, you want to read that?
Pulled headlong down the track, suddenly a form was there, which dumbly crossed my path, as though grown voices from long lack of speech. And seeing it in that desert wrought, have pity on me. I hailed it as I ran. Whate'er thou art, or very man or ghost, it spoke, no man, although I once was man. My parents' native land was Lombardy, and both by citizenship were men.
Mantuan.
Sub-Julio born.
That's Julio. It's Latin, not Spanish.
Okay. Sub-Julio born, though late in time was I, and lived at Rome in good Augustus' house days, when the false gods were worshipped ignorantly. Poet was I, and turned my verse to praise.
And Kaizi's righteous son.
Kaizi's righteous son, who sailed from Troy when Ilium's praise fell ruined down.
Pride,
fell ruined down of late. But thou, why run back where fear destroy peace? And why not climb the blissful mountain yonder, the cause and first beginning of all joy?
I think you should read that next line. Canst thou be Virgil? See what I mean?
Okay. Canst thou be Virgil, thou that fount of splendor of white poured so wide a stream of rosy speech, said I, and bowed my awestruck head in wonder.
Read down through the,
O honor and light of poets all and each, now let my great love spend me, to bent brow and long hours pondering all that book can teach.
Thou art my master. Read those next. you have to finish the Virgil section. It is a period, but you see, he's still addressing Virgil.
Thou art my master and my author thou. From thee alone I learned the singing strain, the noble style that does me honor now.
Okay, see what I mean? It's that continues to explain Virgil. Okay, and then you're going to read from the first on the greater images, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's... now you can go over that, read that over to yourself, and if there are any questions you have on, or if you don't want to, you don't have to read the whole thing. If you want to skip some of it, fine. All right, now let's see, we've got Chris and who else? Mark and you got everybody else? No. Okay. Have you found something, Chris? Have you been able to sort out?
I have a hard time picking out pieces.
Well, you know, you're not necessarily going to get your favorite piece, you know. You'll probably find out after you go over, I wish I'd picked that one, I like that one better.
I think maybe when the messenger comes in to open the gates.
All right.
Just a description of him. And that's in Canto 9.
Canto 9, and let's see. That's where?
And I think line 73. Virgil. He loosed my eyes. Now look, said he. See there. Yonder, beyond the form of the ancient lake, where the harsh marsh mist hangs thickest upon the air. And as the frog, spying the foaming snake, goes squattering over the pond and dive and sit huddled in the mud, even so I saw them break apart, whole shoals of ruined spirits, and flit scudding from the path of one who came to us, walking the water of Styx with unwet feet. His left hand, moving, fanned away the gross air from his face, nor elsewise did he seem at all to find the way laborious. And when I saw him, right well did I deem him sent from heaven, and me to be still. What scorn was in his look! He stood beside the gate, and touched it with a wand. It flew open. There was no resistance. All stood wide. Outcasts of heaven, despicable crew, said he, his feet set on the dreadful sill. Why dwells this foolish insolence in you? Why kick against the pricks of that great will whose purpose never can be overborne, and which hath oft increased your sorrows still? I don't know if I should keep on with all that.
Well, marks of it on jowl and throttle torn. Well, you can...
I thought I could just... Maybe I don't even have to say what he said.
You can... No, you can skip...
Just end at 90.
Yes, you could do that. Mm-hmm. That's all right. Because he certainly... well, I like that. No, I like... I think that... no, I think it's all right to finish at 97. I think you should read what he says. I think it's all right, because it gives you the feeling of that this is an, you know, he's a live voice in the canto, not just a description.
Then on the next page, it's just it's good too, because then back he went by those foul thoroughfares, and unto us said nothing, but appeared like one much pressed with weightier affairs than the cares of those before him. So we stirred our footsteps cityward, with hearts reposed, safely protected by the heavenly wood.
All right, that's good. Yeah, that's fine. No, but that's all right. No, I think you can manage that. It's not too long. 60 lines. All right, that'll be good. We don't have.
Well, either.
But now, if you find something else, you can tell me afterwards if you decided another one.
I liked also his teacher. Section of his teacher.
Yes, Brunetto.
Like that last line, not like the loser, but like the winning one.
Yeah.
And then also, Gurion.
Yeah. Well, if you decide you want to do one of those, let me know. What about you, Mark? Did you find
one? Yeah, I have one, I think, but it's way up at 33.
Well, that's fine. I'm very glad to see somebody in 33. I thought I was going to have to make a little statement that.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin it for the other people.
Oh, don't worry. You're not ruining it for anybody. That's all right.
Okay, well, it starts at 115 and ends at the end.
115, all right.
33.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Should I go?
Oh, go.
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 Tell me thy name. What is thy... Okay. The knight, tell me thy name. What is my price for help? And if I do not see thee free, may I be sent to the bottom of the ice. And he, I am Friar Alberigo, he of the fruits of the ill garden, and this bed dates for my figs are given back to me. How now, said I, art thou already dead? And he replied, nay, how my body fares in the upper world I do not know, he said. Such privileges is this Ptolemaia bears, that oft the soul falls down here ere the day when Atropos compelled
us. Atropos is easier to say in the, yeah.
When Atropos compelled it with her shears. And, if it will persuade thee to take away these blazing tears by which my face is screened, know when a soul is chosen to betray. As I did, straight it's ousted by a fiend, who takes and rules the body till the full term of its years has circled to an end. The soul drops down into this cistern pool, belike a shade wintering behind me here. Belike the shade wintering behind me here still has a body on earth. It's probable thou'lt know. If thou art new, come down from there. He is Ser Bronca de Uria. In this pit's cold storage, he has lain this many a year. I think, said I, that these are pure deceits, for Bronca de Uria has by
Doria.
No means
died. Doria. Not okay. Doria. Doria.
Bronca Doria has by no means died. He wears his clothes and sleeps and drinks and eats. Up in that moat where the hellrakers lie, he answered. Michael, how do you speak?
Junkie, not yet come.
What is that?
So Michael, kid. Mick or Mikhail, either one. Zankade, not yet come.
Not yet come to boil and bubble in a cherry tide when this man left the devil in his room. In his flesh, and that kinsman's flesh, whom he joined with himself in treachery and in doom. And now, do thou stretch forth thy hand to me, undo my eyes, and I undid them not. And churlishness to him was courtesy. O Genoa, where hearts corrupt and rot, locked to all decency, will no man hound thy whole tribe from the earth and purge this lot? For with Romagna's vilest spirit I found one of such rank deeds, such a Genoan, his soul bathed in
Cocytus,
while on ground his body walked and seemed a living man.
Mm-hmm. One part there that most of the time, most of you are really getting, really, that was really good because you are all getting your lines together so that you don't stop just because it's the end of a line, if it makes more sense. But just there where you, there in 129, no, when a soul has chosen to betray as I did, be sure you run that betray a little closer to the, as I, there's a comma there, but it does have to have, as I did, has to come really close to betray, otherwise it doesn't make sense. But remember when you should read these over aloud once or twice just for your own, be sure that what you're reading makes sense. I mean, Dante's verse does make sense, and there are some parts of it that is not as clear as others because of the local thing. For instance, even in this little section that Mark just read, you get his fury, you know. Churlishness to him was courtesy. Oh, Genoa, where hearts corrupt and rot, lost to all decency. Will no man hound thy whole tribe from the earth? You know, the real hatred of the within Italy of these different city-states. But I think you really did very well. Any other questions?
What's churlishness?
Churlishness is, a churl is somebody that's just a kind of a person that has absolutely no manners and is really, behaves as if he had no manners. And some people who do have no manners but behave churlishly are people who just, you know,